1-800-449-8686. This is the Phil Hendry Show.
And the telethon this evening, I think, is at 9 o'clock Eastern and Pacific time. That would mean, I guess, it's taped on the West Coast. It is a telethon to raise money for the victims of the mass murderous attacks in New York and in Washington. And Tom Hanks, U2, Bruce Springsteen, I think I saw some of the names that are going to be appearing this evening on television in an unprecedented broadcast. I believe all four of the major networks, CBS, NBC, ABC, and Fox, will be carrying that. And that's something to run home and check out. And for those of us who are going to be getting that on tape delay, I'm sure there's going to be a way that we can contribute if we want to. There was a really great article that I just sort of plucked off the net today, written by a Julianne Ponzi, talking about the heroes of Flight 93. And I don't want to read the whole thing, but she singles out four people. Todd Beamer, you've heard that name, and you saw his wife, his widow, at the address by the president on Capitol Hill. Jeremy Glick, Mark Bingham, and Lou Nackey. Four of, I don't know how many, attempted to overpower the hijackers on Flight 93. And I don't want to be corny. I hope I'm not engaging in anything too hyperbolic and too melodramatic, but I really consider them to be the first soldiers in this war, the first soldiers who gave their lives in this war against terrorism, as the president, this campaign, as the president and Secretary Powell have called it. But if it is a war, I think those are the first soldiers who fell. And the only reason why I'm bringing them up, and I don't want to make you feel too guilty, but if you're still engaged in this behavior that we're hearing about, a lot of it on college campuses and in the streets and in small businesses, attacking Arab Americans, either verbally harassing them or physically harassing them, if you're engaged in that kind of behavior, then I really believe that those four soldiers and whoever else joined them, you are basically saying they gave their lives in vain. So if you are one of those individuals who continues this nonsensical, completely unacceptable behavior toward Arab Americans, targeting them just because they are Arab, targeting them and with verbal or physical harassment simply because they're wearing a towel on their head or whatever happens to be your problem at any given moment, you're basically disgracing the memory of those people. Because here's why, and I'll give you the reason if it's difficult for you to figure out. And I don't mean to be condescending to all of you. I'm just talking specifically to any of you who may be engaged in this unacceptable behavior, as I said. This is a campaign against terrorists who take innocent lives. And if you are harassing innocent people in support of a campaign against people to take innocent lives, and it's oxymoronic in the extreme. It doesn't make any sense. It's dumb, if I can put a very kind word to it. It's just flat dumb. So I'll read those names to you again, because I was moved by this article. I'm not going to read the whole thing. Her name is Julianne Ponzi. It says, the title of the article is Let's Roll, Generation X Goes to War. Three of these guys, Todd Beamer was 32, Jeremy Glick was 31, Mark Bingham 31, Lou Nackey was 42. Three of them she describes as being Generation Xers. And one of the points of the article is this question as to whether or not they have the stomach to go to war. And I think that's a silly discussion that we don't need to have. These four, in my opinion, my humble opinion, again, not to be melodramatic, were the first soldiers to fall in this campaign. And therefore, if we are running around harassing innocent people in order to support our government's campaign against terrorism targeting innocent people, you're working against your country, and you're really disgracing the memory of those people. That's what you're doing. And I don't want to call it traitorous behavior, but in the middle of a national crisis like this, it borders on it. I mean, you're not doing anything to help anybody. You're not doing anything to help anybody. You're just getting yourself off. If that's it, well, all right, I can understand you. If you're completely self-absorbed and it's all about you and you being mad and your life is upset and you are paranoid and you're worried and you got to take it out on somebody, well, it's just your problem, and I could suggest any number of psychiatrists, psychoanalysts, psychologists, head shrinkers, nut houses that you might want to avail yourself of, but it's not doing anybody else any favor. So I don't think it's too dramatic, because I read the story of these four guys, and who knows who else joined them. These are just the names we know. And reading this story, the first thing that came to my mind was, Well, the first thing that I want to say is, yeah, sure, I would have joined them. I would have done what they did. I don't know. That's my honest answer. I don't know. Okay. But we kind of went through all of that. What I really just want to say is, if you want to hassle Arab Americans and hassle people because they're dressed in Islam gear, and you think you're doing something for your country, ask yourself if you would have had the sheer balls and fortitude to do what these four and who knows whoever joined them did. Now that takes some courage, and it took some selflessness. They knew they were going to die. He told his wife, at least one of them, I believe, Mr. Beamer, I know he spoke to a 9/11 operator and said, we're probably not going to make it. This was selflessness in the most, in the highest traditions. And I heard somebody mention, and it wasn't me who had the idea, I think I heard it on one of the other shows, that if there was a Congressional Medal of Honor for civilians, these guys probably deserve it. All right. 1-800-449 is the number. 1-800-449-8686 is the whole number. To tell you a little bit about our show and where we're going to go with the show, as you know, we have been into a news talk, what I call a serious news talk mode, since these attacks took place, what people are more and more referring to as the attack. I think that's probably how colloquially everybody is referring to what happened to us on Tuesday. It was the attacks. And we've been in a serious news talk mode since then. And what we're going to do on Monday is we're going to return to what the Phil Hendry Show has done, what we do better than, I think, anything, and what people have come to expect of our show, and that is to return to being essentially a comedy show. Anybody that's listened to me over the last couple of weeks, though, are probably going to think, how could this guy ever be funny? You know? Hendry, you've been nothing but Mr. Intense here. Are you telling me, for those of you who've never heard what we ordinarily do, I do invite you to listen on Monday. And I know what you're thinking. You probably think, oh, it's just some other guy doing some yucks, or it's like maybe a morning zoo style show. It ain't nothing like that. It may just very well blow your mind. I don't know. Join us. That is, unless, of course, news develops over the weekend that we have to maintain our coverage of, barring any major news event. That'll happen on Monday. And that will happen right here on your local station. The other thing that I read, I believe, I actually heard it this morning on Fox News, they took two Arab Americans off of an aircraft somewhere in the United States, I think it was in the Midwest, because the other passengers were uncomfortable with their presence on the plane. And if I heard the news correctly, I believe there's an FAA regulation. If I'm hearing the news correctly, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that the FAA has a regulation that if other passengers are uncomfortable with any individual, that individual must be forced to leave the aircraft. And knowing that, I don't have to fly with Schaefer next month to our remote broadcast back east. No, I'm kidding. But seriously, isn't that an interesting law? They took them, and the men who were removed from the aircraft were understandably perplexed and vexed. But I guess there was nothing they could do about it. They had to leave the plane. The other passengers were uptight. This is the kind of screwball that I am. And I've been this screwy, and I've had this kind of a screw loose since I was very young. Back in 1971, an earthquake hit Los Angeles. I was a 19-year-old freshman in college, and the earthquake, as we know it here in L.A. as the Sylmar quake, rolled through Sylmar, California at about 6 o'clock in the morning. It was the first major earthquake of my life. It was about a 5.9 or something like that on a Richter scale. It originated in the desert area north of L.A., and it rolled through the entire city. A VA hospital collapsed. It was quite a traumatic event. I remember getting up and running out of the house in my underwear, whatever house I was living in. I was sharing an apartment with a friend of mine and standing there. And I remember hearing burglar alarms going off and dogs barking. I think I remember hearing a baby crying as the earth was shaking underneath me. And somebody asked me right after that, are you okay? And I said, that was fantastic. It was the first thing that came out of my mouth. And I chalked that up for just to be being young and dumb. But there's a part of my personality, and I think maybe some of you guys share this, where you want to just sort of, I don't know, is it bravado? Is you want to prove you're not afraid, or you want to prove that they can't do that to you again or something? But I would, if were I traveling, I'd welcome getting on an airplane with some Arab Americans right now. And here's why. The security apparatus in this country is so jacked up, so geared up, so on such a high alert that if ever there was a time to fly, this is it. And for anybody to sort of be frightened by somebody just because they got a deep tan is to not be aware of that, not be conscious of that. So, as we've said so often on the program over the last few days, you know, sack it up, cinch it up, and let's roll America. All right, our number 1-800-449-8686. You're listening to The Phil Hendry Show. Get to some phone calls. This is Friday. We're still here. We're still moving. Monday we'll get back to the stuff. We got baseball happening. New York Mets are playing tonight. First ball game in New York. Football on Sunday. Think the mayor of New York, Mayor Giuliani, is going to be going to the Mets-Braves game this evening. There's a big telethon tonight at 9 o'clock, so we're gradually kind of pulling all the loose ends together. All right, and we'll keep doing it here for the next few hours on The Phil Hendry Show. 1-800-449-8686. Back in a minute. First volley in the administration's campaign against terrorism could come sooner rather than later. Defiance by Afghanistan's Taliban rulers of President Bush's ultimatum to hand over Osama bin Laden could hasten the blow. Airstrikes against Taliban targets inside Afghanistan may well come first, according to analysts. Who are these guys? We don't know. Who are these sources? We don't know. What if it's some guy sweeping the floor at the Pentagon? According to our source in the Pentagon, that guy'd be a source in the Pentagon. Guy taking the trash out. And once he took the trash outside, then he's a source outside the Pentagon. We come back inside to mop the floor, he's a source back inside the Pentagon. What do you think? I don't know. I think they're going to bomb. Source inside the Pentagon said, those strikes might have more symbolic than military value, a show of force to follow through on Bush's tough words since bin Laden and his followers have proved elusive. Covert actions and commando raids by specially trained U.S. forces would come later, possibly considerably later. The unrelenting nature of the president's powerful address makes clear that some form of military action is imminent, according to Kurt Campbell, a former Defense Department official. Oh, okay. That's a real guy. Campbell, now with a private Center for Strategic and International Studies, said he expects an early wave of airborne attacks, even if they prove not terribly useful or satisfactory. So what that means is they're going to do that so that we all feel better and we invest in the stock market again. That's what that means. That's for all of us nervous Nellies who they want us to get back into the stock market because they can't think of any other way to get us back in the stock market. I saw a poll on CNN. I realize they're not scientific, but everybody's conducting polls these days. And I while it may not be scientific, I think it's probably representative. This is a CNN website, which is the news website, which just about anybody and everybody accesses for news. And it said, do you think the current downturn on Wall Street is due to panic or real economic problems? 65% said panic. So that's what our opinion of you guys on Wall Street is these days. And so in other words, to kind of jar you out of your panic, I guess it's going to take a few bombs dropped meaninglessly on a couple of buildings in Afghanistan, because that's essentially what that guy's saying, because it's going to have no strategic value, no military value, just a, hey, look at how big our bombs are. I don't know whether I agree with that, but I'll do whatever the president thinks he needs to do. 1-800-449-8686, so long as I agree with it, if you know what I mean. Here's Clark on The Phil Hendry Show. Clark?
How's it going, Phil?
Hi, how are you?
I'm not completely convinced that the passengers took that plane down in Pennsylvania. I know it's kind of a weird thing to say, but do you remember when the
plane... people say a lot of weird things, then the next question, of course, would be, why do you think that?
Yeah, I guess that's right. Well, when the plane first went down, they were saying that you know, they thought that the government shot it down, and then they found a second crash site a mile from the wreckage of the plane, and they said that kind of supported
a second crash site. I heard they found debris six miles from the plane. I didn't hear about a second crash. Okay, well, that's a second crash site 1 mile from the plane is different from debris 6 miles from the plane.
Well, okay. Well, I mean, either way, I mean.
Well, either way, no. Debris 6 miles from the plane could be coffee cups, airline seats, whatever. A crash site is a crash site.
Right. Well, that's what I meant.
But anyway, let's just say you're right. Let's say you're right. Maybe they shot him down.
Yeah.
I don't think it. Do you think that changes what those guys attempted to do?
Oh, no, absolutely not. I'm not trying to belittle them in any way. I'm just saying that if the government did shoot the plane down, I think that they would be more likely to let the story keep going on that the passengers took it down as opposed to them actually shooting the plane down.
Right, and you know, this is a luxury that we've engaged in this country more and more over the years for the last 30 years that, you know, maybe Martians planted a seed here and it grew up human beings, too. I you know, when you just sort of say this stuff and you got no real backing other than a suspicion of the government, then it's just a lot of hot air.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the government might have done it. You know, the government might have done a lot of stuff. The government might be causing hurricanes, tornadoes. I've heard people say the government manipulates the weather. Do you think they can do that?
Probably not.
Well, why not? I bet you they know how to seed the clouds and go up there and do something with the radioisotopes.
Well, I mean, I guess anything's possible.
Hey, if the government shot that plane down, good. I'm glad they did.
I agree with you.
You're just saying what?
Yeah, actually, I'm getting pulled over by cops. I gotta go. I'm sorry.
See you later. I would ask the guy to stay on the line and have the cop get on the phone and do a real radio moment, but then he may not be getting pulled over by the cop, A, and B, I don't want to intrude with a cop giving that guy a ticket. That guy needs a ticket right about now. There's a guy, never seen a guy more in need of a ticket. Maybe the government shot it down. They wouldn't tell us, just like they ain't telling us about all those Martians they got stored away in some air, a hangar? They ain't telling us about that stuff either. So, I wouldn't trust them if I were you. As a matter of fact, I don't think there was any strike on New York. I think it was staged on a Hollywood sound set, and, you know, those are all actors I've been calling back there each day, asking how they are. Here is Chad on the Phil Hendry Show. Chad?
Hey, how you doing, Phil?
Fine.
Listen, I want to get your opinion about the president's speech last night. I've heard a lot of rankling during the day about people trying to figure out what he said and what he didn't say. I think everybody's probably familiar with their civic studies and the Monroe Doctrine, in which at that time President Monroe told the European colonials to stay home, that the Americas were for the Americans. And I think last night President Bush told the world that the United States and its allies will not respect the sovereign border of any nation that harbors terrorism and allows it to get exported beyond its borders. And I think that's a pretty far-reaching international foreign policy statement that the United States and our foreign allies have all bought into. And I think it's probably a pretty dramatic thing that to live in our times. I agree with you. I just wonder how you're feeling about it.
Wow. Well, doctrines are not laws. They're just an idea a guy had. And then he calls it a doctrine, and then everyone goes, wow, that's his philosophy. The Monroe Doctrine carried no legal weight. He still has to go to Congress, and he still had to ask for permission to do anything that he was going to do. It was just a philosophy that James Monroe, and the Monroe Doctrine basically said, this is now, the Western Hemisphere is now the United States sphere of influence. And that's our baby, and you just don't worry about it, Europe. But again, that's just a philosophy expressed. It has no law. Force of law behind it. And I don't know whether Bush is writing any new doctrine. I think that his father probably, wasn't there a Carter Doctrine, too, that basically said wherever American interests are threatened, and then we have the right to go and attack. So, you know, the doctrine, law, some guy's ideas, scribblings on a notepad. The president, said all the right things. We'll see whether he backs them up or not. It's the Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686.
1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
All right, here's a list of the people that are going to be on the telethon tonight. At press time, Bon Jovi, Amy Brenneman. You know, Amy from, you know, like Heat and Your Friends and Neighbors. You know Amy Brenneman? You don't know? She's a good actress. Really good. Jim Carrey, Mariah Carey. Really? What, she got a weekend pass or... George Clooney, Sheryl Crow, Tom Cruise, Cameron Diaz. You do wonder what a lot of these folks will do, but it'll be interesting. Celine Dion, the Dixie Chicks, Robert De Niro. I don't know. He'll come out and just read the teleprompter. And every time I've ever seen De Niro on TV, he looks decidedly uncomfortable doing whatever it is he's doing. Like he doesn't want to be there, but he feels that he should. Also, Clint Eastwood. Calista Flockhart, Dennis Franz, Kelsey Grammer, Tom Hanks, Faith Hill, Enrique Iglesias, Billy Joel, Alicia Keys, Limp Bizkit, Willie Nelson, Conan O'Brien, Tom Petty, Ray Romano, Julia Roberts, Paul Simon, Will Smith, Jimmy Smits, Bruce Springsteen, Sting, U2, Cela Ward, Robin Williams, Stevie Wonder, and Neil Young, and more names to follow. Man, that's going to be star studded. Can you think of, well, other than like the US Festival and the Amnesty International festivals and those things that were major festival events outdoors and incidentally covered by television, I can't think of any original production for TV that had that kind of a lineup other than a lot of those Bob Hope specials. Which I'm kidding about. I mean, I liked Bob Hope specials and everything, but a lot of times you'd like wonder why, you know, Barbara Mandrell. Hey, it's 1999. That's wonderful. All right, here is the Carter Doctrine. Now, this is the kind of jazz I would never ordinarily even bore you with on my regular show. I'd bore you with other stuff instead, but I really like this stuff, and otherwise I'd just be talking to my wife about it, so I have the opportunity, because the guy called in and he said the Monroe Doctrine, yada, yada, yada. And there was a Carter Doctrine, and you'll be shocked, stunned, perhaps mortified, I don't know, to know that the Carter Doctrine was followed by George Bush the First, George I, back during the Gulf War. The Gulf War was promulgated by the Carter Doctrine. The Gulf War got its legitimacy from a doctrine formulated by Jimmy Carter, and here it is. And any attempt by any outside force to gain control of the Persian Gulf region will be regarded as an assault on the vital interests of the United States of America, and such an assault will be repelled by any means necessary, including military force. I don't know if the Carter Doctrine is happening right now with George Bush. This is kind of a whole new policy, but it's more or less a policy on terrorism. I don't know whether you call that a Bush Doctrine or just a whole new military stance or an entirely new foreign affairs stance, but it's new. Here is Modi on the Phil Hendry Show. Hello.
Hi.
Hi, sir.
How you doing, Phil?
Good, sir.
My question to you, and I heard the president's speech last night. I liked it very much. I support our president 100%, and I think he's doing the right thing. However, a day before, President Bush and Colonel Powell have talked to the Israelis and told them, hey, we are very happy and we want you to go back to the negotiation table with the Palestinians. Now, here we are. 25 years ago, Yasser Arafat was wanted as much as Bin Laden is today. He's known terrorist. He was wanted for killing of two United States ambassadors in the Sudan. He was personally responsible for hijacking of airplanes and killing of Israeli athletes in the Olympics of Munich.
Are you talking about Arafat now? I'm sorry.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir,
Arafat. But we are told to go and talk to him and to negotiate with him. Well, President Bush says there will be no negotiation with any terrorist organization.
Right.
So why is the double standards?
Well, because we got a little bit of a gun to our head, a little bit of a back to our wall, or our wall to our back. Maybe the back is to the wall. What did I say? Anyway, we've got a guy here, Arafat, who seems to have changed his ways over the years. At one time, yeah, he promoted terrorism. Today, he seems to be a legitimate link to some kind of a settlement in the Middle East. He seems to be a legitimate authority when it comes to the Palestinian people, although a lot of people would debate that. A lot of people think the new generation of Palestinians thinks he's just a doddering old fool with a gun and nothing much more, you know. But the guy, for whatever his past, has come a little bit more to the center, and without him, who else do you talk to down there with regard to the Palestinian problem? So you gotta sometimes deal with the devil, as we have been saying more and more the last few days. Not that it's original to us, but a lot of other people have been saying, we're going to have to get our hands dirty with a few people that may be unsavory, a few people that might have been involved in some things that we didn't like in the past, but now we need them. Right now, this is a guy as unsavory as he is, and I think the guy's nothing more than a clown. I really don't even know what kind of control he has over the Palestinian people. But right now, we seem to need that guy. So we got to get some crap under our fingernails dealing with him.
Obviously, he's have no control of the Palestinian people, and I think we should stand by President Bush and say no negotiation with any terrorist, past or present. Because
I don't know that he said
Bin Laden,
past.
If Bin Laden will
did he say past
for the next 20 years, that means he's going to be another legitimate terrorist.
Well, first of all, the Palestinian people have, it seems, the uprising, this edition of the uprising has calmed down. The Israelis have pulled out of Palestinian-controlled areas. So to that extent, he's got some control. And so there seems to be something has happened there that one would have to say Arafat's been able to affect. I don't think Bush said anything about not having any dealings with terrorists past or present. I think he just was talking about the current hit parade of terrorists.
Okie dokie, Phil.
You know what I'm saying, man? I mean, yeah, you know, we could really be hardcore. You know what? It would be a great world if everything was morally black and white. And it would be a great world. It's kind of like Don Quixote, you know? I'm only dealing on the up and up, and I ain't going to deal with anybody who's a scum sucker.
Just think that terrorist is terrorist, and there's no good terrorist.
Right, but let's go your way. Let's go your way for a minute. Let's go your way for a minute. Let's say we're not talking to Arafat. Nobody, if you want to talk about terrorists, Menachem Begin, God rest his soul, he was part of I'm not going to call a guy a terrorist, but he was a civilian militia member, if you will, in Palestine before the founding of the Israeli state.
That's true. Okay. That's true. But he only fought military. He fought army.
All right. Well, I don't want to get into a whole
civilians.
Debate. I don't want to get into a debate. All I want to say is, let's go your way and say we don't talk to the guy. Forget it, Arafat. You're a terrorist. We're not talking to you. Well, who are you going to talk to? You got all kinds of people at risk down here. The Palestinians are going ape. Who do you want to talk to?
Let's form a legitimate.
Who?
A legitimate coalition.
Who forms
a legitimate
Wait a minute. I'm asking you in terms of the Palestinian uprising to get that thing chilled out, to get the Israelis pulled back, so we don't have to deal with 18 different kettles boiling over on the stove.
But Phil,
would you please listen to me for a second?
The Israelis have pulled out of those places several times, not only one time.
Would you listen to me for a minute? Just listen to me. Let me finish the thought. Who do you want to deal with in the Palestinian territories, in the Palestinian Authority, if you don't want to talk to Arafat, so that we don't have pots boiling over on the stove all over the place?
There is. They do have other people who don't agree with him who will go to the negotiation table and
do
stop.
Do they have control? Do they exert influence and control over the Palestinian people so that they can, so that he could call a general strike or he could call a chilling out of their hostilities? Do those people have that kind of control and influence?
Like you said before, he's an old fool, and he is an old fool.
I asked you a question about somebody else. I'm not talking about Arafat now. I'm asking you about the people that you just said that they got. Do they have the influence over the people in the Palestinian territories whereby if we needed to have them exert some modifying, ameliorating influence, they could do that?
I'm sure that they can find
people. You're sure that they could find?
I mean, we didn't come to our government here today after 200 or 300 years and a democracy that we had overnight. We worked.
Yeah, it took
that.
About 200 years. You want to take 200 years down there in Israel and Palestine and all that jazz? Or can we get somebody? We need someone in an emergency situation, someone in a 24-hour period who can exert some influence, talk to the Israelis, talk to their own people, and say, look, here's what and what's how and that kind of thing.
We all know that the Palestinian territory,
you know, you're engaging in a luxury.
Terrorists.
You're engaging in a luxury that we don't have, and I don't really have a lot of patience for this chit chat about concepts and generalities and barroom generalities about how it could be between the Palestinians and the Israelis. We have a national emergency right now. We have an international crisis.
We have an international crisis right now,
whereby we need someone to go into the Palestinian territories and speak
to
the people.
The terrorists.
No, you're not even listening to what I'm freaking saying. The terrorist is one thing. Then you got Palestine over here and the Israelis, and that's a whole different trip. It's not a different trip, but they are sub-compartments of one big glove box. And I'm trying to find the keys. Right now, the country's under assault. We're looking for bin Laden. Oops, what's going on? Oh, over here, the Palestinians and the Israelis are going at it. Well, now that's a whole bunch of crap. The last thing we need is something breaking out between them while we're moving forces over toward the Pakistani and Afghan border. So what we say is we go to Arafat and say, could you chill this whole thing out? Hey, you, the cat that runs Israel, which guy is it today? I forget. You, can you get together and chill that out so that we don't have to be thinking about that right now? We can get this going. And the world is pretty much united. Shalom, excuse me. And then let's do that. And you see what I'm saying? Or am I just talking to myself? Or are we supposed to engage in these marvelous barroom generalities and interesting discussions about how, well, theoretically we shouldn't deal with Yasser Arafat because he's a terrorist. And so therefore, standing on high moral ground, I will not talk to him and let the bloodletting continue in the Palestinian territories and in Israel. And that can turn into a conflagration in and of itself. And in the meantime, we'll go over here to Afghanistan, get a little boogie-woogie going with the Taliban over there, and the next thing you know, Syria's going to go in because they've got a free hand because America's diverted over here. Yeah, that's a great world you got there, Modi. Now, we just heard our leaders say, in fact, we were saying it on the show last week before we heard them say it, but I was also quoting guys that I heard on Fox News, so I guess I didn't think of it first. That you got to get your hands dirty, you got to deal with people you don't want to deal with, you can't stand the high moral ground necessarily, you know, a short-term sacrifice for long-term gain, you got to get a little dirty before you can take a shower, no pain, no gain, whatever the hell other, you know, cliche you want to come up with. And Arafat's one of those grubby, dirty little guys. My server keeps disconnecting in here, guys. So I don't know what you want to do. If you can get an engineer in here, I'd appreciate it. So you got to deal with the grubby little people of the world like Arafat because he is of short-term value to us. Anyway, I have a feeling that Modi there understood all of that and just was trying to get Phil riled up here in the first 45 minutes of his show. Just trying to get my blood pumping. Thanks a lot, pal. 1-800-449, like I don't need it. My blood pressure, which is fine now, but I was running a little high there when I was a big fat slob, and I've taken the weight off, so it's down around. It's pretty good, I think. But now, Modi, I'm going to have a stroke thanks to you. Okay, 1-800-449-8686. It's the Phil Hendry Show. Well, hi. So anyway, we're looking for this thing that you mentioned about Bill Maher and whatever he was alleged to have said. And was that show on Monday night, Politically Incorrect? We don't know. We have no information here. This is what happens when a comedy show tries to shift gears into... It was on Monday night, tries to shift gears into a news talk show. We got no information. But Bill Maher allegedly was on his show this week and made some comment that he had to apologize for, allegedly, and we'll find out. And you know how we get our show information on this show? We don't get it off the internet. We don't get it off a newswire. Craig's calling his girlfriend right now. Virginia, hi. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hi.
Hi.
Okay, Phil. I want your opinion. Now, there were two superpowers, the United States and Russia, for a long time, right? Hello.
Maybe.
Okay.
I'm not going to necessarily agree with you because I don't know where you're taking me here, Virginia. Yes, okay. There were two superpowers. Okay.
Okay.
I feel safe enough.
Now, we still have our stockpile of weapons and everything else, you know, nuclear weapons and whatnot. Now, where are all the weapons that they had? I mean,
They have them still.
Yeah, but you don't think some of them got sold or some are missing, some are here or there, and maybe some of these guys...
Maybe.
You know, in...
What you're basically asking me is, do the terrorists have nukes?
They, I mean, this is a funky thought, but what if...
They've been looking for fissible and unstable materials to use in nuclear weapons. We know that. You also have to have a triggering device, and you also have to have a delivery system. From what I hear, nuclear weapons are like on the low end of things that would be feasible to use by terrorists. But yeah, you know, maybe they got one.
Oh, okay.
But you see, and these guys are insane, I guess. They blow up a nuke anywhere in the United States, and that just means, like, the Middle East gets turned into an oil slick. I mean, you know, what are they going to get out of that? They won't have a problem. There won't be any Middle East left.
Maybe they could be quite extreme to where it doesn't even matter because they don't, you know, they're doing this for whatever reasons, the right reasons. They're going to die anyways. I mean, they run, you know, they fly a plane into...
And they don't give a crap about whether Islam survives or not.
Important, you know, yeah, how important is it?
So they just want to commit suicide.
Like if we say, you know, maybe for a cause. I mean...
Well, here's the thing. Yesterday we were mentioning these ideas. You see, there's a lot of conversation going along. I think that maybe it's because we're running out of things to talk about. So we're beginning to speculate and theorize about what kind of weapons they have and if they would use them. And I said on the show yesterday... you're looking at an attack on this country, which was heinous and which was murderous, but really was involved our own airplanes filled with fuel. You see, wasn't any bioweapon. There wasn't what?
Yeah, that was just a perfect way for them to do it with our stuff.
Well, a perfect way for them to do it. Well, they could have exploded a nuke. They could have exploded a nuke. They could have released biochemical stuff. They could have done chemical stuff. They could have done biological stuff. But they didn't. And the reason why I don't think they did is I don't know that they have it. And why do I think that, Virginia? If they did, don't you think they would have laid some of that stuff on Israel by now? Now, here's a country, Israel, as I've pointed out often, surrounded by their enemies, surrounded by people that want nothing more than their absolute annihilation. And I haven't seen any biological, chemical, or nuclear devices used on them. I understand that, for instance, getting a biohazardous material is very expensive. A nuclear weapon, I just mentioned to you, that has its own problems. And chemical weapons. Now, we can sit and converse enjoyably about do they have them or don't they. We can sit here and come up with all kinds of reasons why they got them. And let's say they do. So that means we got to tighten up our security. But I'm telling you, based upon what we've seen so far, if they do have them, they don't yet know how to handle them. And it's possible that they don't yet have control over them or any workable knowledge of how to use them. That's what I think.
Okay, so you don't think there could be like some, you know, something in maybe major cities? I mean, things get smuggled, drugs are smuggled in through
all kinds of paranoia that we can start on the show today. But what I'm saying is, based upon what the experience of enemies of these people have had, I don't see any. For instance, remember the Gulf War?
Yes.
You do?
Yes.
You remember that? That was 10 years ago, right?
Uh-huh.
All right. During that, just the buildup of that war, I heard nothing but it's going to be biological warfare. It's going to be chemical warfare. Saddam Hussein did it on his own people. He's going to do it to us. He could have a nuke. He could have a this. He could have a that. There were people driving themselves ape with all kinds of speculation, and none of it came true. Well, why was that? We were all driving ourselves ape with all of these paranoid thoughts. Possibly, I think it's because, number one, we knew he had chemical stuff. I think that Bush threatened he would nuke him if he... I think that was in that note that they didn't like, that Bush sent Saddam Hussein. I think he said he was going to nuke him if he used them. And secondly, more importantly, I don't think he had anything other than the chemical weapons. But that's just what I think. And what I think, based upon doing 6-hour shows over the last...